Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think of your goals. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you absolutely should get Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I absolutely love Babbel because their courses help me learn real-life conversational skills. It's so easy to learn how to order food, ask for directions, speak to the locals without having to consult language apps. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time offer for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/SPP. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/SPP. That's spelled BABBEL.com/SPP. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The podcast where we talk to smart people, but not necessarily done by smart people.
That is an awesome question.
This one goes down probably on one of my top five.
Hey, I like nutrition. I like to eat food. This is the coolest thing ever. We're going to do this forever.
I wish I paid more attention in that class.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I don't understand that. As a man, I don't get it.
Welcome to SmartPeoplePodcast.com.
Hello and welcome to Smart People Podcast, conversations that satisfy your curious mind. Chris Stemp here. Thank you so much for tuning in. Excited for this episode. Normally, when we get requests to be on the show, the first thing I do is heavily vet the person. What is their background? What's their education? What's their degree? What's their experience? This time, I pretty much said yes based off the title of the book, which is rare. The book is titled Give and Get Employer Branding, Repel the Many and Compel the Few with Impact, Purpose, and Belonging. Now, when you look into that a little bit more, it's basically how does an employer brand itself to get those that want to join the company and keep those that don't to stay away? How can companies better tell their story about who they are, their strengths, and their weaknesses, which will attract the right talent, not just all talent? Our guest this week is Brian Adams. Yes, I asked him about the name thing. And Brian is the CEO and founder of PH Creative, recognized as one of the leading employer brand agencies in the world, with clients such as Apple, American Airlines, GVC, Blizzard Entertainment, and more. I think another cool part about this episode is Brian talks about how he actually started the company at age 26, immediately after quitting his other job. And it's a cool way to start the conversation. I also think it's motivational. So hope you enjoy this one. Let us know what you think. We are smartpeoplepodcast@gmail.com. Remember, for as little as $2 to $5 a month, you can support us on Patreon and get a lot of cool things. You'll get ad-free episodes, access to John and I, access to ask the guest questions, access to our Discord, more coming in the future. Patreon.com/smartpeoplepodcast. Couple bucks a month, you are now in the Smart People Club. That's a good place to be. Let's get into it. We are talking to Brian Adams about his new book, Give and Get Employer Branding, Repel the Many and Compel the Few with Impact, Purpose, and Belonging. Enjoy. Are you aware of this singer, Brian Adams?
Ooh, it cuts like a knife when people bring that up.
Because he played a part of my childhood. Like, I like that guy. And so I can't help it. But when I see your name, it's going to happen the whole time. I figured you get this, but I had to say it.
I only get it once a day.
Original is what you're saying.
Yeah. And I don't know whether you remember when the Kevin Costner Robin Hood movie came out.
That's the movie. That's the song.
Of course it is. So in the UK, it was number one for 16 weeks. And that was 4 months of torture. You know?
Really?
Yeah, because I think I was early teens. And
I was just about to say, you were probably in an age in your life where it really definitely cut deep.
Absolutely. But you know, actually, I love it now because restaurants and hotel rooms get booked really easily. So there's the upside. Downside, yeah. I'm constantly met with disappointed faces when I actually turn up to the restaurant.
Hey, that's, you know, I could see that being a downside. You know, expectations and reality play a big part of our happiness. So if their expectations are set there, I don't know, maybe once they meet you, they're like, I'm glad it was this Brian Adams.
Well, that's a nice sentiment. I'm not entirely sure how true that is. But, you know, it's funny because people say, are you the real Brian Adams? I'm like, I like to think I am a real Brian Adams.
Please define the. And yes, I am. No, yeah. I mean, look, that's what people come to this podcast to listen to. It's just really original ideas right off the bat. Oh, man. Well, now that we have that out of the way, there's a lot I want to talk to you about. You've got this new book, Give and Get Employer Branding, Repel the Many and Compel the Few with Impact, Purpose, and Belonging. A couple of things that jumped out to me, employer branding. We're going to be talking about why employers need to brand in order to attract the right talent. And then where I'm going to dig is this idea of compel with impact, purpose, and belonging. Because in my experience, every company's got a great statement and then they almost never meet that thing. And I have seen hundreds. So just for the audience, that's where we're going. Here's where we want to start. You founded a company that kind of touches on this issue. I was hoping you could just start us off there. What is that company? What's it do?
Yeah, sure. So 2004, I founded PH Creative. We're now a specialist employer brand agency. It's all we do. And we have, you know, that's been the case for about 10 years. We started out as a general communications, I was going to say digital marketing, but we did print and all sorts. I think it was pre-social media, pre-Facebook, imagine that. But, you know, slowly we started to work in the HR space and to the point where we specialize in it. And, you know, Chris, it's fascinating because we got into this space with 6 million and 1 competitors in marketing, and then moving over to this little niche, you know, we had about 12 to 15 competitors worldwide, you know, and it really sort of helped us focus in and grow.
How did you come to found this company?
So I remember doing a job, my previous role, I was a designer for a magazine. It was a lifestyle magazine. It was monthly. So the deadlines were just relentless and brutal. It was like you finish one, you're on to the next one. High pressure, but I loved it. You know, creativity, design, all of the, you know, going on to fashion shoots and mixing with bands and that kind of stuff. It was all great. High pressure. And I remember one day I did something wrong, and it was an open office with about 40 people. And my boss walked out, and he was a big rugby player from the north of England. And he looked like Bluto from Popeye, if you can imagine that.
I can.
He put two fists on my desk, leaned in with his coffee breath and bawled me out in front of everybody. And I felt about 3 inches tall, didn't say anything, stood up, walked out. On the drive home, I decided, that's it, I'm not going back. So I quit my job and I started the agency the next day, just out of defiance and frustration more than anything.
So many of us can relate to that. I think if you haven't been yelled at publicly in a corporate setting and then had the question of, do I leave right now? If you haven't had that experience yet, you're either too young or you will. I mean, it's just part of growing up. Few of us the next day turn around, start a company that, you know, 15 years later, whatever it is successful. First start, what was there early on that contributed to where you are today?
So a couple of things, but the first one was naivety, because I didn't realize how hard it was going to be. And had I probably would have been too fearful to do it. And that's why I'm so grateful to that boss, by the way. You know, that was a defining moment. I always thought, I was 26 at the time. And in my head, even at the age of 26, it was, when I grow up one day, I'd like to start my own company.
Yeah.
So without that inciting incident, it probably would have been, you know, well, who knows whether it would have ever happened. You know, but starting a company, I was lucky enough to stumble across a local organization of other business leaders. And, you know, so I had a bit of a support network. And quite early, I got a mentor a business mentor who gave me some great advice. And I was about to go out of business because I didn't have many clients, and the clients I had wanted 10 times the amount of work that they paid for. And I'd probably underpriced the work and made all the mistakes in the book. And he said, look, just double your prices. So I thought, okay, are you crazy? I'm going to lose the clients I've got. And this, you know, it's hard enough to get more, you know. But I took his advice, and essentially it was what it boiled down to was a limiting belief. I didn't believe I was worth the fees that I started to charge, and it was holding me back. And it was a simple thing, but from then on, I've always had, to some degree and capacity, a business mentor to give me guidance. So I think that stood me in good stead, to be honest.
You said a lot of things that I've heard before, and I think it's just hard to translate, which is, you know, things like that being naive allowed me to start it because I didn't realize how hard it was going to be, or I didn't have perhaps faith in myself. A lot of these things are real. They're heard often because of how real they are. I think the problem becomes, though, regardless of how many times we hear other people say it, does it apply to me? And so are you different? Were you different? What allowed you to push through all of it?
I was at the point of no return before I realized the, you know, the sort of nature of the reality, you know. So I was like, oh, I'm right in the middle of this. I've got to keep pushing forward now. I've got no choice. You know, I still had rent to pay and, you know, a life to lead. And I remember early on, I had a couple of staff. So I now had an obligation, you know, to make payroll and so on and so forth. And it was funny because I had a debilitating fear of public speaking. So I wasn't turning up for that presentation opportunity at the local Chamber of Commerce. I was not doing a great job or even turning down pitch opportunities. So I remember, again, it was almost like sort of sliding doors moment. I got an email from a stand-up comedy course, and I signed up straight away thinking I've got to do something about this. It basically said, do you suffer from confidence? Like, yes. You know, are you missing out on life's opportunities? Yes. You know, is this going to hold you back? I'm like, yeah, you know. So I signed up. It was a 6-week course. And for anybody who hasn't done a stand-up comedy course, it's the best weight loss course you can possibly do. I lost 14 pounds in 6 weeks. Just
because
sheer,
of the nerves?
Oh my God, just terrifying. Sort
wow.
Of, crapping myself on a daily yeah. basis, that'll do it, you know. But I had to do 15 minutes of my own material in front of a comedy festival audience, 300 people.
Wow.
Who paid to get in. Wow. It was horrific. But coming off the stage, I mean, clearly I'd never turned into a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. You know, that wasn't the point. But I got through it alive. I got a couple of laughs in a couple of the right places. And it was a life-changing moment. Because the next day I had a presentation in front of, I think it was like 15 people, and it was an absolute breeze. In fact, I was the most confident I ever remember. I enjoyed the experience. I got some great feedback afterwards, and I think I got a deal out of it as well. It couldn't have gone any better. And in my naivety back then, what it taught me very early on was to sort of face into fears. You know, don't put things off, just sort of, you know, because that's what entrepreneurship is about. You know, and I still had a lot to learn at the time. I've still got a lot to learn now, but that was a defining moment in my sort of entrepreneurial career.
And then the last thing I want to ask kind of regarding the beginning of this, and then we'll jump into the book and employer branding and things like that, is this idea of growth and staying relevant. As you talk about the industry you're in, every industry has changed radically. What was the biggest challenge along the way as it relates to staying relevant? And then how did you get to the point where, like you said, you basically don't have a ton of competitors? You have created the golden goose.
It's funny, actually, because as you get a little bit more confident and you start to think you know what you're doing, there's a real danger of then thinking you've got all the answers and you stop listening. And I've been fortunate enough to build a team around me who aren't backwards and coming forward, telling me when they think I'm making a mistake. So I've always been grateful of people around me sort of trying to keep me on track. But listening to our clients, you know, and you know, Chris, because you did it for long enough in consultancy, you know, if you're not relevant, you're dead pretty quick, you know. So it's common practice to constantly be listening and really sort of digging for, yeah, but what's the real challenge? What's keeping you up at night? And that kind of thing, you know. And then being able to take in several views and try and join the dots and say, well, okay, if everybody has this problem, like, what's the derivative solution? And that's what sort of started me writing blogs and articles and sort of having a voice in the industry, which has helped enormously. And that was the sort of lead up to writing my first book, Getting Goosebumps, in 2015, I think, 2016. And then Give and Get, which launched. It's actually been out a year now, but wow. We launched 3 or 4 days before the world closed down for COVID. So it's like the worst time to ever release a book in the history of books and releases, I guess.
Well, you know, now that you're on Smart People Podcast, it's going to shoot to the bestseller list.
Absolutely. There you go.
So wait, two things real quick aside, Getting Goosebumps. What was that book about? I'll tell you specifically why, but I'm curious. What was that?
So my belief is, like, marketing, the ultimate goal in communications is if you can change somebody's physical state with a message to really connect with them emotionally, then that's the sort of euphoric sort of epiphany, the best state you can possibly reach for. So Getting Goosebumps is, you know, it's about marketing and communications, and essentially it's about storytelling and as it applies to a marketing funnel.
The reason I absolutely love that, and somehow I'm going to steal it to some extent, I haven't decided yet, but is people who have listened to the show for any length of time know every, I'd say 12 to 20 episodes, I'll just pause and I'll say that was goosebumps. It's not controllable. It's not pre-planned. It's not expected. It's something somebody says resonates so heavily with me that this is how I view it. That the emotional response is subconscious. It's so core. I've often viewed crying this way. Now, not necessarily crying out of like fear or sadness, but you know that the kind where you're just like, I don't have any other way to express this emotion. Like your kid's born or something, you know?
It pours out of you, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I can't help it. And like, man, I'll remember that. So I love that thought of the book.
Absolutely. So can you imagine, and I bet every time you've got goosebumps on this podcast, it's the result of somebody telling a story.
Typically, you know? Yeah.
And so the story, I've studied story under a number of people. I've taken courses and I've interviewed 50 of the best storytellers in the world. I actually did a podcast on it for a couple of years called Getting Goosebumps, interviewing like Gary Vaynerchuk and Seth Godin and a few really amazing storytellers, and trying to understand the formula, the architecture for what makes a great story. So that's what that book is about. And actually, it pours a little bit into Give and Get as well, because when we get onto employer branding, you know, essentially it's just trying to humanize an organization in the context of building a reputation as an employer. And if you can tell, if you can articulate what it's like to work somewhere through story, it's the most powerful device you can possibly use to do that. So it's a building block of everything we do.
And now a quick word from this week's sponsor. It's no secret that podcast advertising has taken the marketing landscape by storm. As a podcast, our audience trusts us to put out great content and to curate sponsors with products or services they'll actually find useful. That's part of why the HostRed ad works so well. But the process of booking these ads isn't always simple. A lot of times the process can be super complicated, there's lots of back and forth, and it just isn't worth everybody's time. But it doesn't have to be. That's where Gumball comes in. We listed our show on the Gumball platform because Gumball makes things so easy, it's practically magic. Advertisers will book spots on the show like ours, scripts come directly to us, and all we have to do is record. Bottom line, Gumball makes things easier for everyone. If you're a podcaster, it helps you monetize your show, learn about an advertiser before you say yes, know exactly when you're getting paid, and it's super easy to keep track of your ad schedule. And if you're an advertiser, you get powerful demographic filters to find the right show for you, you can scale and build campaigns with ease, and you can keep track of air checks when ads go live. At Smart People Podcast, we're on Gumball, so guess what? You can buy ads on our show by going to gumball.fm and searching for Smart People Podcast. If you're an advertiser or a podcaster, have a look at gumball.fm. Browse shows, discover new advertising options, or list your own podcast today. One last time, head over to gumball.fm. And now back to the episode.
Well, that's perfect. We'll use it as the building block for this conversation. So employer branding. Listen, we've all heard about employer branding from the company branding. What struck me about this, and I don't think I'm the only one out there who's not too up to speed on this, is how do I brand my company so that it attracts the right talent? Mm-hmm. How prevalent is this amongst employers? How much are they thinking about their brand story versus what they have to offer, which is like, here's a salary, here's a job, here's a task, as opposed to, you know, the thing?
So it's a good question. And I think the market, our industry is maturing now such that it's starting to become commonplace vernacular. It's, you know, most organizations will either have a head of employer branding, or employer branding will be the remit of their HR function in some capacity. A lot of the time, it sits under talent attraction, whoever leads that. You know, but just 5, 6, 7 years ago, every contract or new relationship we would create started with educating them as to what employer branding is and the benefits and values and advantages it can give you in the marketplace. Now that tends to be commonplace, even at C-suite. So you speak to a CEO of an organization, you know, most leaders understand that people are the only competitive advantage left in business, full stop, the end, you know?
Yep.
Therefore, if you can get organized enough to articulate a coherent story that really does resonate with the right talent audience, it gives you that competitive advantage to not just attract based on competency and skill set, but culture match and culture add.
Man, I'm really trying to prevent myself from just jumping in with all of my biases, but they're going to come out anyways, because I think that's what'll make it interesting. The first one is the idea of needing to brand to attract talent in and of itself seems like the reason I don't like it. Look, I know this is not your stance, so I can say this, but like that alone is, okay, so you and some consultants, you, Brian and the CEO or whatever, are sitting off in a suite saying, all right, we need the smartest people. So how do we like break down their psychology and tell this story to bring them in and almost entrap them in this job and give them the golden handcuffs and yada, yada, yada. And you can tell I'm very mistrusting of a lot of organizations. But I think that's also relevant to what you do, because it's not your message. So tell us, do you believe that to be true often, that companies are trying to craft it based on a result and in the process creating more problems for themselves?
Okay, so you've hit on the real nub of why we wrote the book, because employer branding is new. And the conventional approach to employer branding for the last sort of maybe 10 years has been a lift and shift from marketing. You know, so it's, you take the marketing funnel and you apply it to candidates and people. But the big problem with that is it works to, you know, 90% is transferable. But actually, everybody you speak to from a talent marketing perspective, you can't hire. Whereas in marketing, if you can convince somebody to buy your product, you will sell your product to everybody. On this side of the fence, you'll shout loud, you want to be really attractive, but then ultimately, you're in the rejection business. 99.99% of your audience doesn't get the job. So there's a big mismatch. So give and get employer branding has been written to provide an alternate approach to this particular conundrum, such that it's not just about marketing the strengths, benefits, and opportunities of an organization to make you the most generically attractive, so more people apply for jobs, and that's how you win, and that's how you get the best people. This is about matching and balancing strengths, benefits, and opportunities with what it really takes to thrive, including the harsh realities, the adversities, the sacrifices, the commitments it takes to thrive at an organization. And that's not just in a bid to quench the thirst of being more transparent and honest with a talent audience, which exists to a huge extent, by the way. But actually, like if I asked you, Chris, what's the last thing that you were really proud of that you achieved? I mean, does something come to mind when I say, you know, what's your greatest achievement? What are you proud of? Does something come to mind?
I mean, the proudest thing I've built professionally or done professionally is this podcast, hands down.
Great. Scale of 1 to 10, 1 being super easy, could do it in my sleep, no problem at all, and 10 being really difficult. Where would you rate your achievement on that scale?
I'd say it's been 7.
Exactly. So every time somebody achieves something that they're proud of, there is a derivative aspect of hardship, adversity, challenge that has been overcome, or something that they've had to get outside their comfort zone or extend the learning or grow. So what we try and do with Give and Get is give an insight into that aspect. So it's much more, not just transparent, but also it gives the job and the joining an organization much more value and much more worth. You know, like to get into the Navy SEALs, you've got to go through Hell Week. Right. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty awful to me. And it's
sounds
enough.
Like hell.
Yeah, exactly. It's enough to make me not want to even consider joining the Navy SEALs. And obviously, I wouldn't join the Navy SEALs for a variety of reasons. But some people will grow up from an early age and focus on seeing whether they've got what it takes to join the Navy SEALs. And they are attracted. They want to get into the Navy SEALs because of Hell Week, not despite of it. So one person's adversity and challenge is what gives something meaning and value to somebody else. It's what makes them run for the hills and say, hell no, that's not for me. You know, so the idea of a proposition being put out there that gives a talent audience much more insight into the reality, the highs and the lows, the pros and the cons, the good days, the bad days, so they can make a more educated decision. What that means is you'll get fewer applicants, but you'll get a much higher propensity of valued applicants that are coming into the opportunity with their eyes wide open. And when they, if they get the job, they're going to be much more prepared for the environment they're asked to work in. And they're probably going to thrive more than somebody just applying for a job based on competencies. And because they know .NET or C Sharp or Python or, you know, a coding language of, you know, some description. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it makes great sense. Let me repeat it back and tell me if I'm on track here. The idea is, look, every company is going to put their best foot forward. They're going to talk about the benefits of working there. However, yeah, in this newer and continually transparent, I would say, employer branding model, it's, in addition, figure out your unique challenges and put them forth as well, because everybody knows there are strengths and challenges, but the ones will choose you where those challenges actually look like opportunities.
Exactly. It's exactly that. You know, one person's challenge is another person's nightmare, you know, and they'll make, if somebody can make a better educated career decision based on those aspects of your employee experience, everybody wins. You know, if you convince 50% of your audience not to apply based on the reality of what they're going to find, then good. Mm-hmm. I've never met a talent attraction leader who wants a million applicants per role.
Right.
They want the one applicant that is the right person, you know. So whilst the industry, a recruitment industry, will high five and celebrate when they do an employer brand, they get more applicants for each role. As soon as those applicants are received, you've got a recruitment team who are then deluged with all of these applicants they can't possibly get back to.
Right.
You know, there may be some fantastic candidates in the list, but they can't find them because it's like a needle in a haystack. So so what we're trying to do is not be like a magnet to attract, but a smart filter for the good of the candidate and for the good of the organization.
Okay, so I like that idea of, let's put our difficulties forward, and some will see it as challenges to overcome. Some will see it as things they want to run away from. Here's my then concern from there, and I'm sure you deal with this. You go into the company and you say, hey, I'm here to help you do that. And they go, great. And they give you the equivalent of when a job interviewer says, what's your greatest weakness? Well, I work too hard. Like, my guess is you get companies who say, you know, the greatest weakness here is there's so much opportunity. Can you filter it? Or some nonsense like that. Am I on the spot here?
Yeah, absolutely. And if we just interviewed the leaders of organizations and produce brands based on that, you know, that's essentially what you might get. But we look at the leadership view, we look at the employee view, and a lot of the times it's like therapy sessions. Like, they will tell you warts and all. They're like, and here's another thing why it's terrible here.
Yeah.
So you really get under the skin of what it's really like. And then we look at the market view as well. And, you know, again, you touched on this earlier, Chris. If you look at the employer brand of one company and then you line up 10 competitors, there's a good chance you can take that employer brand and put it above any one of those competitive logos, because it all just sounds the same.
That's right.
You know? So a big part of what we do is try and be the most relevant to the talent audience, but also offer a perspective of differentiation, so you're more memorable. And usually, in order to be super different, it has to really resonate and speak the truth, and it has to be inside, baked into the culture of an organization, that everybody will go, yeah, that's right, that is what it's like here, that is the opportunity, but that is what you've got to sacrifice, and so on and so forth. And getting that right isn't easy.
You know? Right.
It's super difficult. A lot of organizations, maybe from a lack of budget or naivety or, you know, a whole host of other motivations, just keep it surface and just put something out there that sounds super slick, and it kind of works because they get people applying for jobs. But, you know, we're in a business of really defining what it feels like to be in that organization, and what it feels like to go on the journey of where the organization is going as well, you know, because it can be aspirational. It's just got to be true, you know.
Yep.
And getting that balance can be difficult, but it's a fantastic industry to be in, because, you know, we're talking about storytelling earlier. Some of the stories I've heard in some of these workshops, you know, our strategists, if they don't make somebody cry during the research phase, we probably haven't worked hard enough.
Wow. You know,
it can be fantastic.
Given the scope of companies, cultures, difficulties, and challenges they're dealing with, you've seen, what are some themes that have stuck out for you as, you know, these are the areas where companies might not be so shiny?
Yeah, so I remember working for, at the time, they were the largest organization on the planet, big tech company. And we, after all of our research, unequivocally across the board, what came out was there's absolutely no work-life balance in this company whatsoever. Like, you literally just need to leave your soul at the door, you know? And if you're going to do 3, 4, 10 years, whatever it is, be prepared that this is, you're giving your life to this organization. And when we fed that research back, you know, the natural question is, oh my God, well, like, what are we going to do with that information? You know, like, what if people find out? We're like, well, people already know, because right, they're the ones that told us, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, when you look at people who apply for jobs, get the jobs, and they find out that the hard way, and it's a shock, and it's a life experience that they're not willing to commit and sacrifice. Look at the disruption that creates to teams, the added expense, the delay in moving projects along. This is probably something that we shouldn't just be honest about. What we need to do then is justify why people are prepared to do that. And what we found was, you join this organization, you quickly become the best version of yourself because of the harsh environment that you're in. It's very sort of high performance. You're surrounded by the smartest people you've ever met, ever. And you get to see your work in the hands of millions of people every day. And we even found an interesting sort of culture, especially with the software developers, who they'd work 14 hours, 16 hours a day and go home. And there's a good chance they'll carry on working when they got home because that's what they love to do.
Right.
You know, there's a certain type of person that really thrives in this organization. On the flip side, there's a type of person who, you know, that's an absolute living nightmare. And then when you look at some other tech companies who do kind of similar stuff, there's, you know, and some of them have been our clients, their culture could not be more different. So therefore, you can take somebody with the competencies and skills to do the job on paper. in one would be a living hell, in the other would be euphoria, you know. So our job is to help people make the better decisions and find a place that they can really thrive and add value.
Hey, it's John. Gonna keep this one short, I promise. If you enjoy the podcast, please think about supporting us over on Patreon. Give a few bucks a month, you get access to our ad-free feed, the Discord, and all kinds of other cool stuff. So to support the show, head over to Patreon, patreon.com/smartpeoplepodcast. All right, back to the episode.
I love that example. It makes me think of, it's a newer piece of advice, which is focus on your strengths instead of trying to improve your weaknesses. It kind of reminds me of that, but in a flip side, which is this: explain your challenges, difficulties, whatever, because everybody has the same strengths. When you talk about, I mean, coding, you know, engineers, software engineers is always one of the easiest ones, especially today. But you could take a Microsoft and an Amazon, we'll take for example, right? And you could be like, hey, if you can speak this code or whatever the hell it is, I don't know that stuff, but you can go work for either. Mm-hmm. And I've never worked for them. I don't know, but I'm pretty sure I could nail how different their cultures are and why just off of what I know of them. So let's not lie about it up front. Let's explain how that turns into progress or an opportunity.
Yeah. So let's embrace it. Let's make sense of it and tell the story of why it is how it is, and demonstrate, you know, not just people coping with it, but people thriving within it as well. But, you know, there's more to it than that, Chris, as well, because we've been in organizations and, you know, we've gone through the research and all the rest of it. And then we found that there's an incredible amount of community outreach and community engagement and philanthropic activities throughout an organization, and it's part of their DNA. And we'll bring that up in research and say, oh yeah, we've always done that, but we don't talk about it when we go looking for talent. Well, actually now in a post-COVID world, you know, after Black Lives Matter and civil unrest and volatility left, right, and center, you know, there's three big buckets that people are looking for. One is career catalyst. Will this accelerate my career? You know, if I do 2 years here, am I going to get the promotion I want? Am I going to get the salary I want? Like, blah, blah, blah. Second one is culture, which is synonymous with employer brand. How am I going to feel? Am I going to fit in? Am I going to feel like I can bring my whole self to work, etc.? But the third one is this idea of citizenship. And I think next year, officially, millennials rule the world, like this of become the age of 42, and they're starting to get the CEO jobs and the leadership roles and all the rest of it. Citizenship, especially with the last 2 years behind us now, is rising in priority, such that people will make career decisions and buying decisions based on how you treat your suppliers and how ethical the leadership is and what's your green policy and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we unearth massive strengths in organizations that they take for granted, and we help them dial up or dial down things based on the appetite of the marketplace and what people really care about. Yeah. It's a matchmaking service, really. What we're trying to do is just bring clarity and simplicity to the opportunity. And, you know, we call it the employee value proposition. What we're trying to get right in that proposition is the give, what you've got to give, and what you get in return. You know, simple as that.
There's a few challenges, such as the one you just mentioned. We work a lot, but we're around smart people, et cetera. That's a cool one. But there's some that I can't imagine anybody wants to go to. So, like, I'll give an example. Hey, this organization is so massive and confusing and political that what you do doesn't actually matter. It's just who you know, how you do it, and, you know, something else, like the FaceTime you put in or something. Mm-hmm. How does that work in this? Does that just kind of get like, okay, we're going to avoid that challenge?
Mm-hmm. No, definitely not. We definitely don't avoid that. You show me any working environment, and it can be the most hostile. It can be vicious. It can be venomous. It can be all of those things. I will show you somebody who thrives in that environment. Now, sometimes it's if you think past your tenure at that organization. So I'll give you a good example. If you can work at McKinsey for 2 years and you can get promoted and do well at McKinsey, there's a good chance that you'll get employed by Google next. there's a good chunk. Now, it's 25 times harder to get employed by Google than it is to get into Harvard. You know, and I'm not saying McKinsey's got a hostile environment at all, but sure. it's a very well-known high-performance culture. It's up and out. They'll either promote you or they'll get you out. You know, so if you can do a good job there and you can stick it for 2 years, you've earned your stripes. Now, somebody really ambitious and career-minded who wants to get promoted and get the pay and all the rest of it will look at organizations, no matter how hostile, and say, I'll do 2 years. I'll prove I've got what it takes to thrive there because it's worth it to me in my career to go on to bigger and better stuff. And if that's the case, you know, Amazon has a hostile environment, a reputation for being fairly hostile and difficult.
Absolutely.
You know, and it bends people out and this kind of stuff. But if somebody came along and they look great on paper and they've been able to thrive at Amazon, you'd interview them, you know. There's pros and cons to all of that, and it's about the context of understanding what your talent audience really want, what's important to them, and what you have to offer, and matching those things together in a really smart way.
That's a fascinating point about show me any culture, and I can show you somebody who will thrive there. What it highlights is, look, thrive for different reasons. And I don't just mean different character traits. I mean different end goals. Like you just said, look, I'm going there for 2 years. I put my life on hold because in 10, I want to have a boat in, you know, San Francisco and exactly. work remotely and all that. That makes sense, actually. It's really hard. And this is why I like talking to people, especially like this. It's hard because we live in our own heads. That's so far away from mine. I'm like, I want to be around good people. I want to make progress in the world. I want to have work-life balance. Like, it's the opposite. So it's hard for me to hear that from a company and say, I want to go there. But that's the entire point of what you do.
Well, absolutely. But Chris, this will make you feel better, I hope. You know, the world is so connected now. It's been run by millennials and yada, yada, yada. So what's happening now is we'll do our research, and it's not about taking the reality that we find and creating the context and matching it best to suit the talent audience. A lot of what we do now, organizations are making different decisions as to how they run, how they do contribute to the citizenship, and their diversity initiatives are improving because they know the importance. And so what's happening now is the appetite of the talent audience is changing how business is done and changing how corporate America and companies around the world build culture and prioritize value in their people. And we're seeing a very clear trend of that, and it's continuing in the right way, which is great.
What excites you next in your company? Maybe it's in this idea of employer branding. Where do you see 5 years from now the work you do being different, and does that excite you?
So what excites me the most is since the book's come out and I've talked about Give and Get employer branding, I've seen massive organizations, global organizations, talk about their employer brand in the context of Give and Get. And so we've made a little dint in the universe in our, nice. In our sector, which is great. And what I'm looking forward to now is that the next sort of chapter is this idea of reputation as an employer, and changing that from the generic, we want to be the best or we want to be attractive, and linking the core business strategy that's on a CEO's desk with what's possible from employer brand to power that with the right people. That direct correlation is starting to be made, and you know, we're at the forefront of helping organizations really craft the reputation they need to drive the business forward. And that to me is a super fascinating place to be. It really is exciting.
Conversations like this, and I've had a couple over the years and listened to people like Gary Vaynerchuk who have changed my opinion on this idea of marketing in general. I think 10 years ago or even 6, 7, I'd be like, hey, Brian, aren't you just like helping put a shiny sticker on something that's probably not that shiny? But the truth is, maybe, but if it gets both parties better outcomes without obviously lying, manipulating, distorting the facts, is that a bad thing? And I think that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, except I would say the days of bragging your way to success are over.
Yeah,
I think that the audience is smarter than that. And if they don't find your weaknesses, potential downfalls, or the harsh realities and this, that, and the other, like, they will go to the likes of Glassdoor and they will find them elsewhere. So you may as well control the narrative yourself and embrace it, because people are smart. On average, people spend 6 to 8 hours researching your company before applying for a job.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, so do you want them to find all of the potential negatives somewhere else, or do you want to be upfront about it? You know, use the 8 mile approach, as we say, you know,
yeah.
That's all the things.
You know what that reminds me of? You might have heard of this. Dan Pink wrote in his book, To Sell as Human, he talked about how the script has flipped and that now the person buying the car knows more about the car than the car salesman. I have never
Absolutely.
Forgot that, because, and people yes. know this, like, I'm doing landscaping stuff. I know more about fertilizer now than most, you know, people who have yes. landscaping companies. I've spent a month yeah. on Amazon and you know, because it's fun. So to your point, more educated consumer, more information, more transparency hopefully leads to those better outcomes if you're doing it the right way.
Absolutely. And that is the perfect example. And I predict the number one interview question asked by candidates over the next 12 months will be, tell me how you managed your people through COVID, and how's the organization changed as a result?
Such a good point. And if it isn't the number one, now it will be, because we're going to tell people to ask it. But I like what you're saying. I mean, you know, remembering it's this two-way street, I think mm-hmm. you're probably seeing it more, but I've heard, I haven't been in the job market, I'm not really doing that thing, but I've heard, like, people have the options now to kind of say, I want to make sure that this role fits my life in more than just, is it a paycheck?
Oh, absolutely. You know, people are shopping for jobs rather than applying for jobs, you know, and we've seen what they're calling the great resignation,
yeah.
you know, like, thousands of people are leaving great companies.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not the great resignation. That's just the end result. It's the great epiphany. People are realizing that they've got more choice. Their life has changed. They wake up one day and say, hey, do you know what? I want to paint landscapes in Scotland. Well, nothing can change. No, like, nothing can change that person's right. You know, people want different things. They're valuing different things out of their life. And it's a buyer's market. So organizations have to listen to that, and they have to move with agility faster than they've ever done before. So they have to have a coherent story and understand what it takes to not just get the attention of a talent audience, but to create affinity with that talent audience quickly. Otherwise, they're going to lose out to their competitors. So it's highly competitive, but bragging your way to winning that competition, you know, those days are gone.
What a great way to end it. I love that. Brian, I really appreciate it. As we mentioned, the book is Give and Get Employer Branding, Repel the Many and Compel the Few with Impact, Purpose, and Belonging. For those listening, you know, and we'll link to the book, anywhere else they can find you. Are you still doing the blog stuff you were mentioning? Where can we go to learn more?
So if you go to ph-creative.com, that's our agency. So you can look a little bit more about employer branding there. Or I'm really active on LinkedIn. So I think it's Brian Adams, spelt just like the singer with the Y, with a number one on the end, I think. You'll find me on LinkedIn.
I love it. Brian, thank you so much. Awesome conversation. Really appreciate it.
Chris, my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Brian Adams. And if you've made it this far, you know it's the author, not the singer. Don't do that to Brian. But Brian's book, Give and Get Employer Branding, Repel the Many and Compel the Few with Impact, Purpose, and Belonging, can be found wherever books are sold. All right, let's jump into the quick housekeeping items. If you'd ever like to reach out to the show, you can email us at smartpeoplepodcast@gmail.com. or message us on Twitter at smartpeoplepod. And if you want to support the show monetarily, head over to Patreon, patreon.com/smartpeoplepodcast. You can give us a few bucks a month, join the Discord, get access to the ad-free feed, etc. Or if you want to help the show in a free and easy way, you can always tell a friend or two or a family member about the podcast, send them a couple of episodes that you think they might like, and just help spread the word. And if you want to stay up to date with all things Smart People Podcast, head over to the website, smartpeoplepodcast.com, and sign up for the newsletter. All right, that's it for us this week. Make sure you stay tuned, because we've got a lot of great interviews coming up, and we'll see you all next episode.